Welcome to the SEAA News Column audio series. I'm host Jing Wang from Rice University. Our first episode starts with a conversation with Heidi Lim, the current editor of the Cultural Consumption and Performance in Asia series of essays in the SEAA section column in Anthropology News. Hi, Heidi.
Hi, Jing. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, and happy holidays to our listeners. So, Heidi, first of all, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So, I'm a PhD candidate in anthropology at Yale University, and I'm writing my dissertation on the use of experiences, so like social interaction with people and things in the culture industry businesses in Japan, and its impact on labor, tourism, and the performing arts. And so I've been the editor of the SEA column since 2013. That's a year after I began going to the AAA conferences and participating in SEA activities as a first year PhD student. So since then, I've had the pleasure of meeting and working with many SEA members who were contributing writers and readers.
That sounds exciting. So how do you like each year's AAA conference?
So each year is a little bit different because at the beginning, you're just new and you don't know anybody and you're just starting to get to know the field and kind of discovering kind of the different kind of panels and interactions that can happen out there. But as the years pass by, it's different because you end up finding, you know, like the people's faces are becoming more familiar. And then also it's very fascinating to meet people your first year and then hear about how their research evolved and being able to be in a venue where you can talk about it in person.
Yeah, that's true, except that some AAAs are held in quite expensive places, so you do not end up meeting all the people you want to because they don't show up.
That is the thing. I mean, you don't see, you know, everybody every single year, so you never really know who's going to show up beforehand.
So this year, our theme is the Cultural Consumption and Performance in Asia series. Can you share with us how you come up with this theme in the first place?
So the SEA column has been running a few kind of themed essay series for a while now, which my former co-editor Yijo and I started together. And so we had a series called In and Out of Japan about mobilities on social movements and digital anthropologies. And we have run articles that's been focused on transnational engagements in non-nation state types of spaces, such as the media and neighborhoods. But at the same time, this notion of identity is also explored since it's something that's very strong among our interlocutors. So at the same time, SEAA has explored the question as an association about how to depart from nation-state boxes and scholarships at the same time. And so there's this kind of unconscious tendency to make groupings like the Japan people or the Korea people or the China people or, you know, the nation-state group kind of people. And so I wanted to run kind of essays that similarly explore how to map these strong identities about identity that our interlocutors have, including cultural categories and conceptions of self, and where they kind of put it in action at different sites, where geography is just one of these many types of sites.
Exactly. Okay. So you're looking at consumption, a performance, and also Asia. Can you unpack those keywords for us so we can understand this general theme better?
Sure. I'll start with consumption because that's one of the keywords that I picked to act as the kind of site I was talking about. That's not necessarily about kind of nation state boxes, or it's not necessarily about one type of kind of geography. And so when we look at consumption, it's not always a simple transaction about like paying for a good, and then that ends, right? They occur within a network of physical, online, and mass media sites. So one of the things I'd like readers to pay attention to is what repeats with consumption, like when I said that it doesn't just end after paying. And so, for example, what happens with particular leisure experiences, stereotypes, or kind of images, or the ways of narrating historical memory and everyday life. And as for performance, one of the things that anthropologists do is to connect the surface text, what we call text, the cultural representation part, with kind of larger structural issues such as power, history, and nostalgia, and the political economy. So the economics that enable these representations to exist. So if you've read the editor's note at the beginning of the first essay that came out, actually, Curating Peninsula Destruction for Timothy Gitzen. This came out in November. You'll probably notice the phrase, the different aspects of consumption and performance. And so I didn't want there to be just, one interpretation of what consumption and performance. So I purposely asked for proposals in the call for papers that loosely interpret the keywords. And so for the first two essays, Timothy's piece, and actually your piece, Jing, Privatizing the Silk Road in Contemporary China, which is scheduled to be published in January 2019, took consumption and performance and then worked them into issues such as cultural curation, the uses of the past, material culture, and the role of the market in this case.
I see. So we still have Asia.
Right, we still have Asia. So that's also a keyword in the series title. And I purposely took out East Asia when I was thinking of the title for the series because when I was soliciting papers, I wasn't sure whether, like I didn't want to limit the essays to just, flows around East Asia. It could flow from, it could flow to. I took the cue from the previous theme series that kind of I helped to put into motion, the in and out of Japan. And so because of that, I'd like our readers to pay attention to the different scales of Asia that the essays attend to. So for example, places where the past and the present meet in complex ways, such as in a museum, a city, like we see in Tim's piece and yours. And another example is post-disaster landscapes, performance sites such as a dance competition, so there's another piece coming out about that, and processes of cultural production involving a performance group and an audience. So kind of not just the event, the performance as an event, but how the group is put together and its kind of conversation with the audience, as well as the touristic landscapes where we can see Asia.
That's true. It reminds me of your work too, on the theme parks in Japan. So that is also what you consider as part of the landscape, tourist landscape, right?
Yes, that's true. I'm actually contributing a piece later in the spring about kind of how the touristic landscape is turned into experiences with characters and the kind of narration running through it. And the theme park is actually my main theme site, and it's an illustration of this kind of larger touristic landscape that's branding, Japan as not just a place, but also a style and a culture. And one of the things that inspired me to think about, like not just geography, but kind of culture as going through a networks of places is a conversation that I had with someone who told me that, what you're doing is not Japan studies. And I was sitting there wondering, why is it not Japan studies, right? I mean, it's not just because, these representations are used to market culture to foreigners that it doesn't mean that it's not related to Japan at all. And the other question that came up in my mind, I think, at some time after the conversation was, okay, so where do you locate Japan? It could be in people's minds, it could be in kind of different business networks, it could be in the media, right? So it's, you can't really confine a culture to a nation state box. So that was another kind of inspiration that came to me when I was thinking about, putting together this series for the SEA column.
I see. So I remember you also mentioned that in our previous conversations too, and you were just mentioned a couple of articles that are either published or going to come out. So what's the schedule and what kind of editorial work you and your colleague Sean put into publishing this series?
So as I mentioned before, the first essay of the series, Tim's Piece, is already on the Anthropology News website. It came out at the end of November, and we will provide the link to the series to our listeners. And so in general, we aim to publish one piece a month in the column, whether it's section-related news or in-depth pieces like the essays in this series. And since so the next essay is actually scheduled to come out in January, so your essay, Jing. And because we have 8 essays in total, so at this rate, the series will run until July of next year. And as for the editorial process, it's not just that the editors receive drafts and then, edit it and then send it to be uploaded. It's a constant dialogue between the editors and the contributing writers from the very beginning, even from when we send out the call for papers. So when I send out my call for papers, I put in my ideas about, what I can see the series can go to, but without really knowing, without getting a response. So when the writers respond to our call for papers with their proposals, I look at them and then I respond to them about what aspects of the proposal I see would fit into the theme. So it's like kind of dialogue about ideas which fit into the theme. And so after that, we drew up a schedule of publication, of kind of publication dates. The writer submits a draft, and there's sometimes a back and forth between us and the writer. And so I would look at the draft itself and then put myself in the shoes of the reader of Anthropology News and the SEA column. And so the audience is actually AAA members and also the general public. And so it's not necessarily people who, work in your exact same field or in your exact same country. So my suggestions at that point at that time are usually, things about clarifying things that people have put out so that even someone who doesn't work in the country would understand what you're talking about or can get a concrete idea of your main point. And so the other things I write back about is about matching the writing style to match Anthropology News's identity as a publication that features substantive pieces that's based on anthropological research, but written in a magazine style.
That's very interesting because it sounds like you're trying to bridge anthropology, or more exactly, East Asia anthropology, as a way of public engagement as well. So I'm curious, how do you see the SEA news column as a form of public engagement, especially among East Asia anthropologists, but also open to the general public?
So in general, I feel like anthropology as a discipline should engage the public because, we put ourselves in these situations where we work with people, we're kind of in the society itself. And so it is one way of giving back to our interlocutors, not just, we're not just swooping into their society and, telling them the answer to their problems, but it's also clarifying and also sharing the knowledge so that other people can understand kind of the cultural and like the larger situations around certain groups of people, right? And so Anthropology News, it's it's a publication of the AAA, but I believe that it's more than just a AAA member newsletter. Even though, yes, we do report on, like member-related news. And writing for the SEA column and Anthropology News is not the same thing as writing for an academic journal. And it's something we talk about a lot at the annual kind of editors meeting for the section and kind of the anthropology news editors about. And our column runs pieces that balance both research, but that's made very accessible to our readers. And the pieces are, they're very short, they're 1,000 words, so the style of writing have to be very concise and accessible so that, more people can kind of understand what we're trying to point out, like the knowledge that we're trying to share. It's a channel for getting the word out about what anthropology is and what anthropologists do to people who are not working in our field or who are not necessarily familiar with what anthropology is. And so, as for the themed essay series itself, I see it as very similar to conference panels. And so, conference panels are, in general, more of a testing ground, an accessible testing ground for new ideas where you can engage in conversations about it with other people. Since they're short and they bring people together around a topic that they're all interested in. And so the essay series is something similar, but it's an ongoing written conversation. And then there's an archive, it's an online collection of essays. And so in general, I encourage people to submit essays to the column when they want to experiment with writing out their ideas, but they're not ready to, commit to a longer piece yet.
I really like this idea of an ongoing written conversation. So, for anyone who is listening now, I would say we have our editor Heidi Lim and Sean Frost's information in the written form you can see in this section. So, we also strongly invite people to test out their ideas and have this conversation going on. And now for Heidi, at the end of each episode, we will invite our guests to recommend one writing in the field of East Asia anthropology they really enjoy reading. It can be a short essay or an article or even a book. Can you share with us some of your favorite?
Sure. So, since I'm here in my capacity as the SCA column editor, I'll actually use this opportunity to invite our listeners to go take a look at our column archive that's on the SCA website. And so, normally the articles are on the Anthropology News for several months before they're archived under Anthrosource, but we're also allowed to kind of put our articles on the SCA website so that it's kind of easier to get to. So you just go under news and then the SEAA news link. And I'd like us to, reflect on the public engagement issue that we just discussed. You can see concrete examples of writing that are concise but well researched. And so I want to kind of emphasize again that it's possible to write for multiple audiences without compromising, the research and our analytical angle that we use as anthropologists. And so right now I'm actually thinking about the term writing one over from the special speaker at the SAA business meeting, the Jeffrey Wasserstrom. We talked about, writing for someone who's working one field over, one area over. And I think it is possible to kind of share knowledge that way.
So you've just mentioned this idea of one field or one area over. Do you feel like you've found some really good piece to recommend as an example of that spirit?
I'd like to invite our listeners to read the essay Japanese Radiation Refugees in Malaysia, written by Shiori Shakuto in 2017, which is part of the In and Out of Japan series in the SEA column. It's a piece about families who decide to relocate from Japan after the 3/11 disasters. And it's mostly the women and grandparents who end up taking care of the family abroad, in this case, Malaysia, while while the men stay at their jobs in Japan. This essay discusses issues of gender and family structure as it pertains to mobility, and also highlights inter-Asian connections.
Wow, that sounds really interesting. Yeah, I saw that before, but now that you remind me, I hope that everyone who is listening to this series would take a look at this particular article, but also the entire In and Out Japan series as well. So thank you very much, Heidi, and we look forward to read more essays that are going to come out very soon in 2019.